This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. In today's program, we consider the social wisdom of consumer advocate, presidential candidate, social critic, and public citizen, Ralph Nader, speaking recently upon the publication of his latest book, 17 Solutions, Bold Ideas for Our American Future.
All right, I'm going to cover a lot of ground. And it's not ground that you're taught, whether you're in business or political science or chemical engineering. There are a couple of chemical engineering students here. And what happens when we all grow up corporate, and we all grow up corporate, this is a corporate-dominated society, by the time we're 20 years old, we've seen tens of thousands of advertisements that provide the image of the marketplace. For example, I saw thousands of advertisements when I was your age for cars. I never saw a single ad on television for public transit. Now, I have to persuade you a couple things. Number one, we all see just a tiny bit of reality. That's the nature of this complex world. But if we grow up corporate, we see even a less bit of reality. We don't see how corporations affect us. Corporations and corporate power, they're not part of the presidential campaign. You saw that debate. Anybody talk about corporate crime? Which the Wall Street Journal reports all the time is a corporate crime wave, from Wall Street to Houston. Commercial crime, ripoffs, banks, insurance companies, violation of toxic control standards, violation of labor laws. It's all over, but it's off the table. You see him talk about single payer, full Medicare for all, everybody in, nobody out, free choice of doctor and hospital. Majority of the people want that. Majority of nurses and doctors want that. Doesn't matter. The two politicians running for the White House never talk about it. Green Party does. One area after another is just off the charts. It's not in front of our consciousness, even though you don't take a single breath in 24 hours without being affected by corporations. Look at your credit cards, your debit cards, your gadgets, your TV. Look at the food you eat. Look at the air you breathe. Look at the water you drink. Look at infant formula replacing mother's milk. That was a spectacular marketing victory for corporations years ago, instilling fear in women. Look at the choice of transportation systems. Look what you have to do to get around here on the ground. Look at the poverty. Look at the horrendous poverty. Half the people in this country are poor. That is, half of the households, say 2, 3, 4 people, parents, 2 children, under $40,000. That's not considered poor. A 4-member family making under $40,000 is not considered poor. The official definition of poverty by the Department of Labor, if you have a family of 4 and you make $23,000 total before deductions, you are not considered poor. If you make $22,000, you are. That's the cutoff, right between 22 and 23. Now, there are ways to start waking up about this. I got pretty angry at the auto companies, and I wasn't much older than you, but I had saturated myself with the engineering deficiencies of motor vehicles and how long the engineers had developed seat belts and airbags and better tires, better brakes, etc., but they weren't being put into cars. That wasn't the priority of the auto executives in Detroit. We've been waiting for full health insurance coverage since Harry Truman proposed it in the 1940s, and we still don't have it. And in case you think this is just an economic issue, 800 Americans die every week because they can't afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated. Who says so? Anybody who makes an assertion at this podium, when you come to lectures, you always try to ask 2 questions. What's your evidence? And what's the legal authority when they talk about foreign and military policy and drones and, you know, invading anybody, any area we want, killing anybody we want? What's your evidence? What is your legal authority constitutionally, statutorily? So my evidence on 800 a week is a peer-reviewed study by Harvard Medical School researchers that came out in the American Journal of Public Health in December 2009. That's 45,000 people a year who die because they can't afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. And you can imagine how many get sicker and get more injured because they can't afford health insurance to get treated. Now, nobody in Canada, France, Germany, Japan, Taiwan, Italy, Sweden die because they can't get health insurance. They're insured from the cradle to grave. So what's the problem with the land of the free, home of the brave? What's wrong with us? The politicians lull us into an egomaniacal complacency by saying, America's number one. Are you kidding? America in 1980 was number one in wages. It's probably 25 in dropping among other nations. America was the nation's leading creditor. They owed us. Now we're by far the leading debtor in trade imbalances. 32 years straight of trade deficits, for example. America has more people in jail per capita than any country in the world, far more in China. We had 200,000 people in jail 40 years ago. We have 2.3 million now, many of nonviolent drug offenders. You know, they smoked the weed. They had a few in reserve in their pocket. Yeah, we're number one in all those. Yeah. Number one. Number one in consumer indebtedness. Now, we got to shake ourselves out of our complacency. I know what you're thinking. You got your own personal problems, your own personal delights. You want to do well here at USC. You're looking to get a decent job in a shrinking job market, white collar, blue collar. There's a considerable anxiety and insecurity because of that. You have student debt, right? Don't you have student debt? A lot of you have student debt. And so that limits your expectation level of yourself. And you never want to do that. You must have a higher estimate of your own significance. How many of you know anything about nanotechnology? That's exploding. It has incredible consequences. It's decentralizing. Pretty soon it'll be students in high school working it. The technology is decentralized. There is no legal regulation of it. It's in 5,000 products, but it's nothing compared to what the potential is for invading your privacy, subjecting you to all kinds of controls. There are a lot of benefits to it. You know, they can direct the drug right to your particular tumor, they claim. But all these technologies that are tumultuous, the companies will tell you their benefits, genetic engineering, but they won't tell you the dark side. That we have to find out for ourselves. Prop 37 is the first step here on the ballot. It would be mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods in the supermarket. If you win it, it'll spread across the country. Monsanto controls Washington on this issue, but they're not going to be able to control you, although they put $35 million into you. We have a paralyzed society when it comes to solutions. We have pretty good muckraking that we're living a golden age of book exposés and documentary exposés. There's a great one coming your way, if it isn't here already, The House I Live In, on drug policy and the war on drugs, produced by Eugene Jaricki. Keep your eye out for that one. But the more we have, and they're coming out like 10 times more than when I was your age, exposing the steel, the copper, the oil, the insurance, the banking industry, what's going on in the third world with Western companies and China and serf labor in Indonesia and supplying Apple, computer, and so on. You've seen all this. And the more comes out, the less change. Why? Because as citizens, we've quit. We got other more important things to do than attend to our civic duties. Half of us don't vote in presidential elections. Most of us don't show up, half of democracy showing up. Let me ask you right now, how many of you have never been at a Starbucks, Walmart, or shopping mall? How many of you have never been to a city council meeting? See the hands? Don't be bashful. I want to make a point here. How many of you have never been to a court of law as a spectator? As a spectator. Okay. How many of you have never been to a prison or penitentiary as a visitor? Okay. Now, you see, in the commercial sector, you're there. You want to buy things. No problem. But in the civic sector, you're not there. And ask, why does a society that has so many solutions on the shelf or in pilot projects, we got examples of the inner city school that really works, but it's not the majority. So we have all these solutions, like we don't know how to provide nutritious food. We don't know how to decentralize our economy. So we don't have the strings pulled by some people in New York or London or Chicago, or destabilize us, hollow out our communities, ship our industries to fascist and communist regimes overseas who know how to keep their people in their place and their workers in their place and then bring it back here. We know how to do all these things. We got spectacular public transit now, not just buses. Personalized public transit. And you know a lot of it yourself. But what's the gap between the problems and injustices on the ground and what's on the shelf? It's us. We're not in the action. We're not in the civic action. I try to convey how easy it is. People check out from participating in democratic movements because they have four excuses. One is, I don't have time. The second is, I don't know how to do it. I mean, I go to these city council meetings, I don't know, what's this Robert Rules of Procedure? They tell me to shut up and sit down. Or the third one is, I'm afraid. I mean, they slander you, and it's not good for my promotion, my work, to be controversial. And the fourth one, this is the cop-out. If I do all this, nothing's going to happen. The big boys are going to decide, so let's just get along by going along, play by the rules, work hard, make money. Maybe you'll end up with a little yacht, good vacation, be up in the top 5% or 1%. Now, there's something about all of us that does not like bullies. Big corporations are bullies too often. They want to plan everything for us. Their nature is to be a hierarchical, authoritarian power machine. Look at General Electric, Verizon, ExxonMobil, Pfizer, Kennecott Copper, and on and on. That's the way they're built. That's where their dynamism comes from. It comes from an authoritarian system where you don't have a Bill of Rights in that workplace. They can search you anytime they want. They can fire you without cause unless you have a union. They can suffocate your First Amendment rights. You can't be part of a Citigroup or Bank of America and say, I want my First Amendment rights. He says, there's the door. There's no First Amendment rights inside that corporation. Now, to keep their market share, to keep their power in Washington and Sacramento, they develop a very elaborate control strategy. It's called strategic planning. But what do they strategically plan? You study, they strategically plan how to expand markets, how to recruit the best people, how to deploy capital, how to control inventory. But they also strategically plan our elections, our politicians, our government. They commercialize childhood with their marketing, bypassing and undermining parental authority, selling these little kids junk food, junk drink, violent programming, and these kids are swelling into obesity and diabetes, huge epidemic. They want to strategically plan the food we eat, the limits of cleaning our air and water by their lobbies. They're strategically planning our genetic inheritance. Try Monsanto and other companies who have thousands of monopoly patents on our gene sequences, human gene sequences, and outright ownership of flora and fauna. They're planning our military budget. That's what Eisenhower warned us about, the military-industrial complex. Did you know that our military budget is one half of the federal government's operating expenditure? Doesn't count insurance, you know, social insurance, Social Security, but all these departments, one half, we have no major enemy in the world. Soviet Union is done. We're not worried about Moldova. Communist China, they're not interested in sending missiles. They want our industry. We have a few criminal gangs. How in the world can you sustain an $800 billion military budget, which was $300 billion 12 years ago, $300 billion. If you don't exaggerate these gangs, overreact to them and spread them all over 25 countries. Al-Qaeda was only in Afghanistan. It's now everywhere, moving into Syria. It's in Somalia, Yemen, North Africa, Pakistan, Iraq. It's all over. That's how successful we've been. It's page one story in the New York Times today. Wow, guess this. The arms that we're facilitating going to the rebels in Syria are falling into the hands of the radical jihadists allied with Al-Qaeda in Syria. Now all that's business. More and more business. More special forces, more helicopter gunships, more aircraft carriers. It's the military-industrial complex. Show me when Lockheed Martin ever says enough is enough in terms of their bombers. Show me when General Dynamics ever says enough in terms of their nuclear warhead submarines. You know, one Trident submarine with multiple warheads. Boom! 25 minutes later, how many cities are extinguished? Anybody know? 200. Anywhere in the world. And we're building more. So we're not building enough good clinics, good schools, good public transit. No, no. We've militarized our foreign policy. That's where the big money and the lobbies are. We don't spend anything waging peace, maybe a few million bucks in Washington. Waging war, big stuff. You know what's going to go on tomorrow in the White House? It's called Tuesday with Barack. Barack, although he may be on the hustings now, he's suspended. But what he's been doing is meeting with his national security officials. This is all reported in the New York Times, May of this year. And he is told, you decide, boss, which drone fires on what suspects, who lives, who dies. One day, the CIA didn't want to make this decision. It was the Taliban, Pakistan Taliban. Now, the Afghan Talibans are fighting us. The Pakistan Talibans are in this no man's land, but they really are focused on the regime in Pakistan. He's on the roof of his house, and his wife is rubbing his back, and he's got other members of the family. And they said, we got him in our sights. What's the decision, President? That's what he does Tuesdays. He said, push the button. Vaporized. You don't think that's ever going to come to haunt us? Are we kidding? You don't think cybersecurity is going to come to haunt us? We're just ahead of the rest by a few years. You don't think nanotech, military products are going to come back to haunt us? If we do that to any country in the world with our drones, never mind national sovereignty, suppose there's a group that wants to overthrow Putin in Russia, and they're operating. You know, we have a lot of immigrant groups over our history trying to overthrow people in their ancestral land. What's going to stop Putin sending a drone over? He'll say, you do it. Why can't we do it? Now, here's the problem with your generation, if I may beg your indulgence. Number one, you don't get angry enough when there's legitimate ground to, except for ethnic, racial, and gender verbal slurs. You're number one in American history. Woo! Don't ever dare mess with you on ethnic, verbal, ethnic, racial, and gender slurs. But the actual deeds behind those, the poverty, the actual deeds behind the discriminatory verbals, you don't spend as much time on. It's very hard to get a rise out of you, which is why I wrote this book, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism. Test it. This is your test, and it's not multiple choice, which we urge getting rid of it 31 years ago in a pioneering study. This book summarizes 200 corporate outrages that affect your health, safety, and economic well-being, environment, worker place. 200. They come from the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, AP, not from us. And there's an introduction and an aftermath. And basically it is, are you any different 3 hours later than when you started? Because the lesson of history, it doesn't matter what you know in your head about injustice if you don't have fire in your belly. How many of you have heard of Rosa Parks? Okay, you remember she didn't want to go to the rear of the bus in 1955. The bus driver went like this. And she said, I'm just too tired. And she plunked herself down on the front seat. Well, a man came up to her and looked down at her and he said, get out. Called the police, arrest. Montgomery bus boycott, the rest is history. You don't think thousands of black people in Montgomery, Alabama, knew what she knew when they went on the bus? Of course, that was their life. Back to the rear of the bus. She had fire in her belly. By the way, she was preceded by someone lost to history, a 16-year-old girl who did the same thing a few months earlier and was arrested. The same every justice movement. If you don't have fire in your belly, you know what the psychologists call it. It's called emotional intelligence. If you don't have fire in your belly, you don't break your routine. You don't do something different. You don't change your priorities. And students the world over are in a routine rut. When I was at Princeton, I could tell my friends, every weekend they did the same thing, whether they went to New York chasing girls, whatever. Every weekend they did the same thing. They were in Firestone Library. Well, you know, it was male. No women were allowed in Princeton. I went to Harvard Law School. Same thing, the routine was stifling. I would go down to the slums in Boston to get a perspective on how the law was used as an instrument of oppression, like landlord law. We had a course at Harvard, you know, they're preparing corporate lawyers. They weren't preparing people's lawyers, lawyers for migrant workers, lawyers for steel workers, lawyers for patients who were cut up by incompetent practitioners. No. It's corporate lawyers. And we had a course called landlord-tenant. We never got to the tenant. There's no business representing tenants. And you know something? It completely escaped us. Nobody raised any objection. That's growing up corporate. I mean, no one said by April, Professor, you know, the tenants, we understand, outnumber the landlords. They don't have many lawyers. When are we going to get to tenant rights? We had a course called Creditor Rights. Notice, that's where the money is, right? We didn't have a course called Debtor Remedies. Nobody even noticed it. We had no course on corporate crime. We had a course on street crime and juvenile delinquency. It was an elective. So how about your curriculum now? What's missing here that you don't even notice? Because we grew up corporate. Now you say, what do you mean growing up corporate? I resent being told how I grow up. All right, let me test you. Although I've prejudiced the answer. When I say the following words, what immediately comes to mind? Violence, welfare, regulation, and crime. Am I correct in concluding that you have images of street violence, war, people lined up for welfare checks, street crime, and government regulation, right? And you're right. You're not mistaken. The only thing is, you're quantitatively less significant. Because there's far more corporate crime and violence. There's far more corporate regulation of our lives. They even use government to regulate us. Try the tax system. And there's far more corporate welfare. 16,000 people died in the U.S. from homicide last year. 16,000 homicides in homes and on the street. Remember that figure. Okay. Last year, 58,000 people died from workplace-related diseases and trauma. OSHA figures. 65,000 people died from preventable pollution. EPA figures. 100,000 people died from medical malpractice in hospitals. Harvard School of Public Health figures. Another 100,000 died from preventable hospital-induced infections. Centers for Disease Control. Why aren't the politicians talking about this? They're talking about terror. Every month, more people die from air pollution than 9/11. And the difference is it happens every month. You see how growing up corporate, we remove from our consciousness far more greater sources of preventable violence. Because we don't want to have to focus on the source, the we being our society. Here's another little test. What if someone said, jot down everything you own? And so just a little experiment. Okay, you'll play along. So you jot down everything you own, you know, clothes, furniture, car, motorcycle, electronic equipment, smartphone, and the person says, keep going, and you have a pile of paper you own, you have a savings account, keep going, and you're down to paper clips. And you say, I'm done. He said, what do you mean you're done? You're not done. You didn't put down that you're part owner of the commons, the great commonwealth of America. We own a third of our public lands, a third of America's public lands. We own the public airwaves over which TV and radio transmit their programs. We own trillions of dollars of government research and development. You think these private corporations built the biotech industry? You think they did the basic research for the containerization industry, for the internet, for the semiconductor industry, for a lot of the pharmaceutical industry? It all comes from National Institutes of Health, NASA, DOD, Department of Defense, your tax dollars. What are you getting in return? Tremendously high drug prices, like AZT and other drugs that were developed, Taxol, that was all developed by government money and given away to the drug companies without any price restraints. Do you know I went to 3 years at law school? We never talked about the split between ownership and control. That is, We own the public lands. We own the broadcast airways. We own all this R&D. We own trillions of dollars of worker pension funds, or your parents do. We don't control them. The timber, oil, gas companies control. They get it pretty free from the public lands. And the radio and TV networks and broadcast companies. Look, is there a student network? You got 16, 17 million college grad students. Why don't they have their own TV network? You may not think you need it now, but the internet. But you should have your own studios, your own radio networks. Should have for decades. But no, we do not control what we own. That's part of growing up corporate. I think one of the most subconscious examples of growing up corporate are all the fine print contracts you sign. Is there anybody here who's never signed a fine print contract? Credit card, debit card, opening a bank account, insurance policy, buying a used car, whatever. They have destroyed freedom of contract. You want to prove it? Next time you have a fine print contract, why don't you change some of the words? Like, let's say you're buying a car, you don't like the warranty term. So you cross it out, you double it. Put your initials, like your business class shows you, you know? Take it back to the clerk. He says, I think I got it just where I want it here. And I've also crossed out the compulsory arbitration, which takes me out of the court of law, trial by jury. And I've crossed out the unilateral modification. But I want to buy your new car. Here, sign. They'll throw you out of the dealer. That's how subversive it is to say, no, I want a meeting of the minds, like they teach you in business law, contracts a meeting of the minds. Have you ever met the mind of Sears or Citigroup or Bank of America, right? So what they've done is they've turned you into contract serfs. And this is not just minor technicality. This has huge economic consequences. We have a website called faircontracts.org if you want to see what we're doing in this area. And if you want to see what else we're doing, essential.org is another website. Now, every democracy has to have certain sanctuaries that are not for sale. Government should not be for sale. Elections should not be for sale. Childhood should not be for sale. University should not be for sale. But when commercialism overpowers all these civic values, everything is for sale. Because that's what commercialism is. Everything can be bought and sold. But if we don't have these off-limit sanctuaries, we will subordinate our far more serious civic values, health, safety, respect posterity, equal opportunity, the right to make a decent living, the right to a clean election with competitive candidates, not gerrymandered districts, the right to grievance resolution, and on and on. It's all roughshod because everything's for sale. When everything's for sale, guess who makes most of the sales and the purchases? The rich, the 1%, you know, Occupy Wall Street, the 99%. So look how easy it is for you to get power. Suppose someone said to you, write a 1,000-word essay on how in 1 year you can be 100 times more powerful as a citizen. Holy cow. Where do you start? I mean, if someone said, write an essay on how you can be twice as good tennis player or dancer or working a chemistry lab experiment, you'd know how to do it. Now watch how easy it is to turn this country around. Congress is the pivot. Congress is the most powerful branch of government under the Constitution. They've given it up to the White House, but it's still written in the Constitution. The taxing power, the spending power, the war-making power, the investigative power, the confirmation of nominees power, you name it. And you've studied it. Who's out there in the districts? They got the thing completely gamed. 90% of the seats are slam dunk re-election. They got it all gerrymandered, either slam dunk Republican, slam dunk Democrat, you got a top two situation here that changes it a little bit. Now, do you know what's back home? Back home is 650,000 men, women, children, every congressional district. The insurance agents are organized back home. The banks are organized back home. The auto dealers are organized back home. The NRA is organized back home. But how about the general citizenry? If you look at this book, 17 Solutions, these are long overdue solutions supported by a majority of the people. No big deal. This isn't far out stuff. You want to change the tax system? Okay, folks, vote on this one. Before we tax your labor, we want to tax what society likes the least and dislikes the most, like Wall Street gambling, casino capitalism, derivatives, huge source of revenue, like corporate crime, like pollution, carbon tax, like the addictive products. I mean, it's a rational system of taxation. You want to tax things you like the least or dislike the most before you tax work. How would that play? These are all majoritarian, a lot of liberal conservatives on the same side of a lot of these. Reduce the bloated military budget? That's stealing from your present and your future. Do you know if you bring back our soldiers from Western Europe and East Asia? What are they doing there 66 years after World War II? Is that all we have to offer the world? The policemen of the world? We can't be a humanitarian superpower for clean drinking water, and anti-infectious disease control, and agrarian co-ops, all the things that we can give to these people? No, we're a military superpower. Well, you know, like 10, 20 years ago, bringing the soldiers back from Germany, Japan, Italy, France, and we got them everywhere, would have given every student in every public university free tuition with billions of dollars left over. Now you say, free tuition? Why should we have free tuition? They recycled the tax dollars. They recycled people's tax dollars into a great community return so that in Western Europe, people were not just paid by their salary or wage. They were paid by what can be called the residual return from the benefits of how their tax dollars were used. And we don't get that. Only in Alaska. Everyone in Alaska gets $1,800 a year from the oil trust fund. So you got a family of four, four times 1,800, you know, helps pay some bills. Because some far-seeing legislators, back when the oil companies were getting ready, said, look, you know, we're not going to just tax you a little bit and watch you whittle it down with your lobbyists in Juneau. We've got a trust fund which has tens of billions of dollars in it now. And the investment return comes back to the people. So it's a permanent trust fund. Now, let me just suggest something. You have a political science course. I want to show you how easy it is. Because if you don't think it's easy to turn this country around, by mobilizing 1% of the people, focusing on the senators and representatives, with, say, 10 or 12 directions like this, long overdue, full Medicare, living wage, cracking down on corporate crime, redirecting corporate welfare and bloated military expenses into repairing America, schools, drinking water systems, public transit, community health clinics, all the things that are falling apart. Good jobs that can't be exported, and a lot of other things. 1% of the people. Okay, so let's say you have a course in political science and you study Congress. You know how you study Congress. You got a big textbook. You learn all how things are on paper. And then you get a little reality of the corruption and campaign finance abuses, and things like that. What if you had a course called Congress 101? And every semester, USC students are studying the contemporary activities of your two senators and your representative from this district. And as you study them, and as you break them down in bits and pieces for assignments with the students, you are diffusing this information throughout California on a website. So the senators can't make a move without you knowing. You know what fundraisers they go to. You know who they're, what they're voting. You know who's got their hooks into them. You know when they're playing hooky and absentee voting. You know how they behave on at committee hearings. You know how they handle constituent service. You know how they manage to avoid having a competitor. Just real time, it goes right out. And imagine if universities up and down the state. Do you realize you become the most important people in the lives of those members of Congress? They're terrified of you. And by the way, it's a much more rigorous course. First of all, it'll be much more interesting to you. I mean, some of these political science tests, you know, it's like eating sawdust without butter. I mean, you feel you're becoming significant. Your imagination is being provoked. So who's stopping you? Is it the pedagogy of the plutocracy? Is it the Board of Regents who want you to say, go Trojans, go, like a Pavlovian specimen, you know? They get the football field, we all salivate. You know, Robert Hutchins, when University of Chicago was a major football power back in the 30s, he abolished it when he became president. He says, you want to play football? There's a field down there. Go play football. That's not what we're all about. If I say to you a certain college name, what comes to mind instantly? Ready? Notre Dame. Football. Huh? How about Duke? Basketball, right? You think something else goes on there? Right? Okay. What if we said USC, congressional power? Right? Okay. Now, if I leave you with one impression, is that it's a lot easier than you think to turn this country around. Because one, we have the Constitution, you know, it has its weakness, but it starts with we the people, not we the corporation. Okay? Corporation doesn't exist as a word. Company does not exist as a word. Political party does not exist as a word in the Constitution. Why are we ruled by them? Whatever happened to we the people? Anyway, we have the Constitution. Second, all kinds of solutions. Transforming our energy over to renewable and energy efficiency. End of fossil fuel combustion. Nuclear power, a nightmare in the past. We got all kinds of solutions. Some of them are pilot projects. Yes Magazine has some good examples, comes out six times a year out of Seattle, Yes Magazine. We have all kinds of social solutions. Really now, we can't have a better prison system, one that deals with rehabilitation instead of solitary confinement, brutality, and cruel and unusual punishment, especially since most of them are in jail now for not homicides. We can't bring these schools alive the way a student, a teacher did in Utah a number of years ago when a little girl in the fifth grade class came and said, I just discovered a waste dump seven blocks away. They thought she was crazy. Well, there was a waste dump, and it was a big square block, and it was covered with shrubbery. Make a long story short, the teacher organized the fifth graders. They got an appointment with the mayor. They got it cleaned up. They went to the state legislature and they testified on behalf of a Superfund law. And she writes a book called Kids in Social Action. There's so much time wasted in school. They talk about testing and they talk about leave no child behind. It's all nonsense. It's just a way to bureaucratically cover the ass of the administrators and the politicians with these stupid multiple choice tests that drain people, drain these youngsters out of any kind of cognitive knowledge. It's like a puzzle. You're better off with assessment tests, like the tests you take. There's no experiential learning. They've closed down the shops like we used to have in high school. You learned manual trades, gone. Physical education, gone. Obesity in, overweight in. They want you to look at computers, screens. Have you read that MIT professor who years ago wrote that great book saying no computers until high school? And he gave some pretty good reasons why. Shredding that person-to-person connection. The connection between classroom and community. They learn about the history of the community. They learn how's the drinking water? Where's it come from? How's it purified? What kind of rights do we have to get reports regularly under the drinking water law of 1974? That's what we pushed for. They don't know what's going on in City Hall. They've never been to a town meeting. They don't even know the natural artifacts sometimes. If you have rivers going through the community, they're polluted and nobody wades in them or fishes in them or swims in them. They don't even know they exist. They're sewers. So it's a lot easier than you think. There's a lot in here. The problem is, how do you get your generation to read something that's not on a screen? Well, you say everything is on a screen. Make the difference, please. There's a difference between information bits and knowledge. There's a difference between knowledge and judgment. There's a difference between judgment and wisdom. It's a continuum. And we are so overwhelmed with bits of information pouring into us, plus a lot of nonsense text messages, gossip, you know, congealed idiocy. You got students now that couldn't look at a horizon because of what's in their hand. Heaven forbid you see a student walking through campus like this. They're like this. What's the urgency here? Where are you? Do you know what's happening to you? Do you care what's happening to you? Do you know how much we need you? Do you know how important you are? Do you know that you're in the top 1 or 2% of people your age in the world, able to make a difference? Because of your health, your education, the country you live in. It's time to get more serious about serious things. You are serious about other things, personal things. You ask people who are young, you think you're free in America? Of course we're free in America. Why? Because you can choose what you want to eat, choose your friends, pick your music, go anywhere you want. Pick your job, maybe, sleep when you want, marry who you want, divorce who you want, turn whatever programs on that you want. That's not civic freedom, that's personal freedom. There's personal freedom in dictatorships, not as much as here, but you know, they can go hunting, they can decide what they want to eat if they can afford it. It's civic freedom to shape the future of the country. To be able to say to Bush and Cheney, we got a movement coming out of our campuses, busters. You're not going to lie ourselves into Iraq. That's what Ron Paul said. Bush and Cheney lied us into Iraq. It's incontrovertible. I won't go through the lies other than so-called weapons of mass destruction, which didn't exist. We knew it. 1 million Iraqis have died. The side has been broken apart. Sectarian killings. I just asked Condoleezza Rice Friday at a dinner. She was talking about the rule of law as the keynote speaker. She says, I stood up and I said, Ms. Rice, how do you square your rule of law? Constitutional, statutory, and international treaties with what the White House asserted were the reasons for invading Iraq. And how do you think it's turned out? All the death and destruction is still going on, and dictatorial regimes on the way, if not already there. She said, you have to understand the arc of history. She said, quote, I take responsibility for these deaths and we had false intelligence on weapons of mass destruction. But it'll work out. The arc of history, 10, 20, 30 years ago. We had no business doing that. It was an illegal, unconstitutional war. No draft on campus, no protest. Nixon knew what he was doing, getting rid of the draft. You're not part of the risk, you're not part of the solution. So let me just suggest, and you have professors here who can advise you, ask yourself, what's our civic engagement curriculum? What is our civic power curriculum? Okay, some of you are going to be engineers, physicists, sociologists, psychologists, English language specialists, foreign language specialists. But all of you need a civic curriculum. Otherwise, you'll have difficulty answering the question, knowledge for what? Beyond your own specialty. Knowledge for what? We started years ago, the public interest research groups, CalPERG, it's not here, right? Why isn't it? It's in Santa Cruz, Santa Barbara, Berkeley. Why not here? Why shouldn't you have your own civic power group where you hire your own lawyers and organizers and lobbyists so that you can do something about things that you think are wrong here in California? You have the initiative referendum recall. I don't have that in Connecticut. You can be your own legislature. You want to do something about tuition at community colleges in the Cal State system? You're not in that system. You can do something that through initiative. Always ask yourself, how can we become more powerful in a more functioning democracy in ways nobody can stop us before the opposition starts? How do you get to second base before anybody tries to stop you? And that's what's important. Let me just end. I'll end. You know. Heaven forbid.
Questions after this.
Yeah, I know. Heaven forbid that we have 6-hour sessions like some baseball games and football games. I want to leave you with one sensitivity. When you're 65 and 70, and 75, and you look back on your life, what do you want to be remembered for? And you answer that question now, you'll start breaking new pathways for your energies and your intellect. If you wait until you're 65, 70, it's a question of regret. It's not a question of projection. And now is the time when you want to start answering that question. When you're as free as you're ever going to be, the boss is not on your back, as it will be shortly, either as a big company or a consultant. And you're able to ask the impertinent questions, and you're able to refine your idealism with rigorous senses of justice and injustice. So make the most of it. Thank you very much.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacific Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And that was Ralph Nader, author of 17 Solutions, Bold Ideas for Our American Future, speaking recently at the University of Southern California, as recorded by our Pacifica colleagues at KPFK from Global Voices for Justice. And that concludes today's program with WBAI engineers Michael G. Haskins and Reggie Johnson. We welcome your comments with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.